Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's the first Wednesday of the month and has been our pleasure for a long time here on this day, first Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock, to talk about food and cooking with the man that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And for a long time, he's been stopping by on a regular basis on the program to talk about food. And the idea here is that there generally is a theme. We don't always stick to the theme, but there generally is a theme to the program. We start out with a kind of idea and then talk about that. And it might be a particular key ingredient. It could be a particular kind of dish where we say, you know, how do you make this? What's your version of this? We've talked about cooking from different parts of the world and different parts of the United States. And we always have a good time telling stories and exchanging recipes. And, you know, occasionally we have had people call and said, I'm trying to make this and it's just not working. What do you think I'm doing wrong? So we've done a little bit of that kind of thing. And we always have a good time when he is here and often generate some good recipes. People listening have, over the years, phoned in and shared recipes with us. And now we have a whole bunch of them on our website that you can look at. So this time around, Doyle said, well, now it's summer. We are at the point where we're getting great summer produce. And there is one item that I think people look forward to all year long, and that's corn. Some folks do that, prepare it in the absolute simplest way. You know, you put it in boiling water for a little bit, and then you pull it out and you eat it, you know. But it's also corn is really a very versatile ingredient. There are a lot of different things that you can do with it, and he has a couple of recipes that he wanted to share. And perhaps you folks who are listening out there in Radio Land, you have a good recipe that you might want to share as well. That'd be great. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And if you are listening around Illinois and Indiana and it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana and toll-free 800-222-9455. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Once again, it is that time when the farmers market are going full strength.
Oh, yes.
And the best, you know, now you can get corn.
Truckloads of corn.
And you can get pretty good tomatoes if you're careful, and a lot of other good stuff as well. And I know that it's a time that a lot of people just look forward to all year round when that time comes, because it's special, and then you get it, and you have it there, and then before you know it, it's gone.
It's gone.
And all you can do is sit and wait till next year.
Well, I was sort of pondering. I mean, this is the first day of August.
Yes.
I don't know how we got here.
I don't know either. I've been thinking about that myself. Only one more month of climatological summer left.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess if you enjoy summer, get out there and enjoy it. Otherwise, I sit at home looking at my L.L. Bean fall catalog and wish it was September.
Wait for fall.
Wait for fall.
Oh, dear.
So is there something that particularly got you thinking about
corn? Yeah. As I'd said to you earlier this morning when we got together, that both you and I came from an environment that said, eat cream corn out of a can or boiled corn on the cob, and that was it. There was nothing else that was done, as I said, unless you were Pennsylvania Dutch, then you had it dried, and then you ate that later in the fall and the winter when it was gone, when fresh corn was gone. But there wasn't much of a great variety of stuff being done, at least in Middle America. And what has happened is that I find corn sort of cropping up in different recipes, like, wait a minute, this is a totally different kind of a dish. And the first one that sort of piqued my interest, although I don't do it, but I was curious, like, well, where did this idea of corn salsa come from?
Oh,
because
yeah,
all of the salsas that all of a sudden have grown. I mean, if you can get a mango and a papaya salsa and you know, then I'm saying this is way out of my experience range. But then you begin to find in the South, they begin to put corn with beans and things and make a salad. And I have a variation of a Russian salad, which I'm anxious to make because I'm going to make it tonight. I hope it works because it seems to be very good. But its basis is corn, and then you find some other combinations and other cultures that use corn in a totally different way. Yeah. I don't think that. I'm stretching it if I even say that no one ever did it, but I don't think that grilling corn was a very popular thing, 20, 30 years ago. It was always boiled. There might have been a few, but you walk the streets of Mexico and you pick them up and eat them with your fingers, grilled corn. And I think I found it in Greece. That you could get grilled corn on the streets. And that was quite a surprise to me. In fact, I'm sort of taken aback because I didn't know you could do that. Like I say, either the can or boiled.
Yeah. So that's another one of those things that's on my list. I keep saying I really want to try this, to grill corn on the outside on the grill.
Yes.
Because in recent years, probably, certainly if you look at books on grilling, that's going to be one of those things they say, well, no big deal. You can do that.
You can do it two ways. One is to keep the husk on it and soak them in ice water for 10 minutes and then cook it, and then the outer husks begin to char, and that kind of steams it and all. Or the other way of right down to the nubbins and grill it and kind of char it a little bit, mm-hmm. either one way or the other. Which brings me to my first recipe. friends of mine served corn the other evening, and it was boiled, but. It was the way it was finally prepared, which is to take melted butter and just slather it with melted butter. Actually, it was melted the butter substitute.
Margarine?
Not margarine. Yeah, margarine. I can't say his name. The one with all the good oils in it.
Oh, okay. Well, it was. I can't believe it's not butter. It was something like that.
Yeah. So anyway, that was melted. Okay. And then sprinkled ground cumin over it, and then squirt it with a little lime wedge.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, that's a totally different experience and really delicious, and it's quite invigorating.
Yeah. I'm sure that I have seen recipes like that, or maybe it was it used some kind of oil. I suppose you could use olive oil and a little lime juice and chili powder.
And then
that put that on your grill and grill it just so, you get a little browning, a little caramelization on your corn. So it's sort of a related but slightly different.
Well, and I have no mm-hmm. idea. Our communication is a matter of, wow, we got the whole world in our radio. But that's new. Mm-hmm. That's really new. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it can't go back more than 15 years if it goes that far.
Well, I finally got around to grilling my pizza. Sooner or later, another 5-10 years, no doubt, I'll try grilling the corn.
Right, yes.
We got somebody to talk with in Belgium over by Danville. Let's do that. Line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll give you a different way here.
Okay.
Corn.
Sure.
Probably something you haven't done because usually it's only farmers that get it done, okay?
Okay.
Okay. This is called roasting ears. I don't know if you ever heard of roasting ears.
I did indeed.
What it is it's regular yellow dent corn. You have yellow dent corn, which we grow thousands of acres of.
Yes.
Then there's sweet corn, which is different.
Right, and then there's popcorn.
Popcorn, which is more like the traditional Indian corn.
And those are the three corns.
Exactly.
I learned that from Alton Brown last week.
There you go.
And dent corn is the farm corn, yes.
Yeah. Well, if you take yellow dent corn and you get it shortly after it becomes fertilized and the ears are just starting to form, you'll get small ears that are really much tenderer. They have a different sort of taste, and we always just roasted them. Open back the husk, take out the silks, and just put them in the oven and roast them, and then put butter on them. Sometimes we boiled them, but you had to get it just at that
point. You had to get it early.
Just right, just the right moment, or it tasted just like the cows ate it. You know,
well,
what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not good at all.
Well, it wouldn't. It would mature too much.
Exactly.
And then the sugar turns to starch.
Exactly.
And a whole. You know, it's interesting. You remind me of that word, roasting ears. I'd known those words for a long, long, long time, and I guess I could never figure out why. Why do we call them roasted ears and we boil them anyway?
No.
I think we generically called all corn on the cob roasting ears.
No.
But I see, and I knew of if you get there at the right time. But I mean, you don't have many days to be able to do that. It comes and is gone.
That's why usually the farmers know, because what they do is they count the number of days, okay?
Okay.
And they know when they planted it, they know about when that's
right,
going to be.
Right, right.
So therefore, they can get it when it's at this peak. Now, not all farmers do that, but the ones I grew up with, they love their roasting ears, but it only lasted about a day and a half.
That's exactly it. Maybe that's why it was so special.
Yep.
That was good.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you very much.
That's good. I'm glad to re-remember that. I knew that the dent corn could be eaten, and everyone says, "Oh no, you can't! It's too blah." And I said, "But somewhere, somebody told me a long time ago, you get out there on that first possible day, and you can do it." But I don't think it's ever sold. I think that as the fellow said, this is something that only the farmers know about, because you couldn't possibly sell it. Because the thing that happens with corn is, as soon as you cut it, then it begins to want to turn into starch, which is why you want to boil or blanch corn quickly, because that stops that activity and maintains the sugar in it. So sometimes, if I'm going to chop the corn off of the cob, I'll give it 30 seconds in boiling water. And that stops that and changes the chemistry right away.
Yeah.
And all.
I was just talking about this yesterday with one of my producers, Martha Deal, who was talking about how when she was a girl that her dad, I guess, was actually grew it. And I'm not sure if this was sweet corn or field corn, but she was talking about how he said that it was it had to go from the field to the pot in something like 2 minutes.
Oh, yes.
You know, he was very, very serious about the fact that you pick it, you cook it. That's that. And that there's this really tiny window, and that if you waited any longer than that, that was not going to be any good. And of course, you can only do that if you can walk out to your own field and
That's
pick
right.
the ears
That's
and
right.
then come into the house and cook it.
That's right. Which always makes me sort of nervous about buying it, you know, at 10 o'clock in the morning at the farmer's market, except been awfully good.
Well, and there, I guess maybe if you're lucky, it's only been out of the field, you know, maybe some matter of hours.
Well, I also think that they've bred a new strain that allows that length of time to happen, and it is a specific kind of corn that we get. We don't get the field corn.
Yeah, so. And although it's just not, you know. What you can get, the fresher the better. What you can get at the farmer's market, if you're lucky enough, you buy it from the guy who grew it. It's just not like anything else.
No, it really isn't.
You can't walk into the, you know, you can't walk into the grocery store and pick up an ear of corn and have it be that kind of experience. For whatever reason, it is not the same. Exactly. This is the morning of the month. We talk about cooking here on Focus 580. The guest is the man we like to call our chef in residence. Purely an honorary title, ladies and gentlemen, Doyle Moore, and he's been stopping by here for a long time on the first Wednesday. We talk about cooking and usually pick some kind of topic and always have a good time. And he said, well, perfectly appropriate to the season, the place we are right now, he said, let's talk about corn and different things that you can do with it. Certainly, as I said, a lot of people just like to do the most simple, direct way that you possibly can, and that's great, you know, that's very good. Nothing against that. But there are different things that you can do with it. And more people are, as Doyle said, doing different kinds of preparations that when he and I were kids,
long, there was
back
not
in the
much
day,
choice.
You know, you didn't, yeah, you know, the idea of a corn and black bean salsa, you just didn't, it didn't exist, at least not in our houses.
Exactly.
It didn't exist. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, you said that you had a Russian salad
or
a variation of a Russian salad?
Yes. There is a Here's someone.
Well, there is a caller coming in. The numbers. I could give the numbers. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. And we have a caller here right on here at line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't have any magical recipes, just thoughts on getting the fat onto the corn cob.
Oh, yes.
We got lazy at a family gathering and put out, it wasn't my idea, a stick of butter.
Yes.
On a plate. And instead of using a knife and genteelly...
dripping it all over your plate, yes.
And we just rested the corn cob on top of the stick of butter.
Yum.
And rotated it. I don't know why it had
Did you have those little corn handles on
no,
you didn't
no,
use?
No.
I think that's why they were invented. Exactly. It wore down the stick of butter while you were doing it.
Yeah, so you end up with an ear of corn indentation. I don't know why it took so many years for this group of people to figure out this, but but the other thing, I think maybe the margarine you're talking about is Smart Balance.
Smart Balance, thank you. I just couldn't get those words out.
Yeah, so when I'm feeling virtuous, I use that. But they also have that available in a spray bottle.
Oh.
So you can spray it onto things.
And that's right.
And I spray that onto popcorn that I've popped in a microwave popcorn popper.
Yeah.
Without any oil.
Yeah.
And then once the popcorn is out, I spray that on. So not a recipe, just technique.
Well, as you pointed out, that was not the way it originally started. And I have no idea how that came about. I bet it was somebody like Betty Crocker or some, you know, the general foods people said, oh, do it this way. Because I remember it became very fashionable to do that.
But
I always thought it was a little messy, but you had to pass around everything. But rolling it, yes.
Oh.
And it's an adventure that you never, you know, you don't remember doing it. It's a new excitement of doing it. So that was a lot of fun. It was sort of.
Well, it's sort of like eating other foods with your fingers. I think that we were always being very proper. And
I too, yes, because
it didn't show up in New Jersey where I grew up. Anyway, somebody else probably has some interesting corn recipes, and it's certainly a yummy food. Take care.
Yeah, right, thank you.
Well, let's go to and talk with someone in Decatur. They're next on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my thoughts go back maybe at least one call, possibly two, but to your mentioning the historical aspects of roasting ears.
Yes.
When I was walking the streets of Japan in 1949, when it was really ancient living over there,
yes,
there were vendors on the streets with their charcoal pots. They weren't hibachis, but charcoal burners of some sort.
Right.
And on the grill, they had corn in the shuck. And we ate it. I forgot what it sold for. It was yen then was
$365 to the dollar, yes.
$333 to the dollar, yeah. And it reminded us of home, I suppose. So we ate the stuff.
Now, you see, you were just about 3 years earlier than I was at that particular point. And I do remember seeing corn on that was what was going in my mind when I said, well, it was always in Mexico. But no, it was corn, and corn was very important in Japan, and it got there very early, and I think it got there by the Portuguese.
Oh.
And because it's a new world crop, but painted screens in Japan that have cornfields in them. I think we have one of those screens at the Chicago Art Institute. And I was like, well, wait a minute, how were they doing this in the 17th century?
Well
the answer was the Portuguese got over there.
Was I eating field corn, by the way?
Probably.
Really?
Probably. It might have been. It might have been light because. But you see, for a long time in cultures other than the U.S., people would not eat corn because it was for pigs only.
Yes.
And so it could well have been the use of the roasting ears at that tender point when we were talking, because the idea of sweet corn, I remember that being rather rare. Oh, sweet corn. Oh, yeah, we've got some of that. But as always, not too much. So my guess would be it would be have been a form of that field corn.
Well, as I recall, it was relatively good.
It was great. And at night when you walk along and you find those little vendors, and they've got other things too, but that was a treat, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the story.
You helped made me remember sometime.
That's very interesting. I would not have thought that corn would be particularly important. Certainly rice is extremely important. That's their big grain.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's much wheat grown in Japan, much of any wheat grown in Japan.
Not a lot, because there are not a lot of...
Or millet or, you know, those kinds of
there are not grains. A lot. Bread is an import from France. So, I mean, the bread that they're cooking is all French style. Or now, I suppose, Italian and maybe even artisan. But bread didn't exist, flour. So my guess is there isn't that much wheat. I do know there's rice everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk with somebody in Lexington, Illinois. This is line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about various ways that you can blanch corn to freeze it and save it
to
eat later. And I'm going to listen to your answer on the radio because I'm driving, all right?
Oh, okay. Good enough.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, okay. What about that?
What do you know about it, David?
I this is not something that I've ever done, so I guess I would be completely
Well, I would stick with my 30-second rule, I guess, because that's the one that I use to make certain things. You don't want to cook the corn necessarily, mm-hmm. but you want to blanch it in order to stop that enzyme, the esters. You want to change because they quickly want to turn into starch, and so you want to stop them while they're containing sugar. And it doesn't take very long, and 30 seconds. Would be plenty of time to do that if you're going to then cut them off the cob, or even freeze the cobs themselves. You can freeze them separately and then put them in packets and serve them later. And all you do then is just throw them in boiling water and cook them at that particular point. But it only takes a blanching to stop that chemical action. And I think that was about 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, maybe somebody else listening has some, you know, they want to tell us how they do it or what kind of approach
yes.
they have. You know, that's always the great thing about this show.
We'll listen.
Somebody, there is someone who has the answer to what almost any question. So 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. We're halfway through here. This is our monthly program on cooking. We do this, have been doing this for a long time with the man we like to call our chef in residence, picking some topic and then just having a good time talking about that and exchanging recipes. And this time around, he said, well, let's talk about corn. It is the time of year where the farmers have good sweet corn and bring that. Sometimes they're just plunging it into boiling water for a couple of minutes, and that's that. But there are different things that you can do with it. So particularly if you have an interesting recipe that's a little bit different, not such a direct kind of thing as that, but a little bit different that you would like to share, that'd be great. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I think we have another caller here ready to go on our line number one and in Gibb City, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello. First, I want to say that the charcoal that you gave me worked very well.
Oh, good.
And my question about corn is, we got fresh corn and it tastes better the second day because we got to be kind of in a corn frenzy when we have it fresh.
Oh, yes.
And And I just wondered if you knew that. And to the caller who was wondering about freezing corn, I guess I'm kind of a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants type of cook, or I don't always go by a recipe, but what we do is with leftover corn, it's just cut it off the cob and put it in Ziploc freezer bags.
Oh, that has already been cooked. You have it left. Yes, that would take care of the same situation.
Yeah.
I think that's a little longer cooked than you need it, because you're going to want to heat it up and cook it some more when you take it out of the freezer.
Right. It might not be quite the quality you want. And also, what I think I do is, if I have fresh corn that I want to do, I think I do it 2 minutes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, blanch it 2 minutes and then put it in ice water.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And then cut it off the cob.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's a little longer, but it works, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I just enjoy listening to your program.
Well, there are a lot of new things we learn, aren't there?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, if other folks out there listening, they have a story to tell or a question or a recipe or something they want to get in on the show here, give us a call, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Now, you said that you had this recipe for a Russian salad,
yes,
or a version of a Russian salad that you thought you might
share. Let me give that now, because this is going to be so new, it hasn't been done yet. My reason for doing it is that I can't eat legumes, and this salad comes from Russia and is all canned vegetables, about four or five kinds of beans and corn. But the dressing that you put on it and such is exceedingly, I think, very unusual and extraordinarily delicious. So I want to make it into something that I can eat, and I've chosen to do chopped green onions, and then corn that you cut off of the cob, and then radishes that are very thinly sliced so that they're thin enough that they'll soak up some of the it's not really a vinaigrette, but kind of, and then chopped celery for a texture, and zucchini squash that you cut into thin slices, and then you julienne those slices, and then you chop so that they're about the same size as the corn. So squash and celery and radishes and corn and onions. And then you use a dry mustard. Coleman's is okay. It's a little hot, but I buy it bulk here in town, dry mustard. And dry mustard and a malt vinegar or a cider vinegar and olive oil, and that's all that is in the vinaigrette, is vinegar and oil and mustard, mm-hmm. dried mustard. But you want a goodly amount of the dried mustard, because it wants to be very sharp and very, very almost hot. And then these vegetables soak it up, and I want to get home right after the show and make it, because I want to have it for supper time tonight, and you would like to have it sit for a period of time. You could add sliced potatoes to it, but that's if you do a lot of beans. It's a lot better if you did all the beans. But mustard and vinegar and olive oil into these small, and it doesn't want to be big chunky things. It wants to be very small dice. And what a surprise! You say, why haven't I eaten this before? You know, and it's true that it came from a culture that uses a lot of canned products because they're available, mm-hmm. and about four or five kinds of beans and corn and peas, and I can't eat all those, so I'm making up my own version.
All right.
It will be brought out tonight.
Let's talk with somebody else here in Champaign. That's the next person. They're on line number one.
Oh, yes. Thank
Hi.
You for mm-hmm. taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I am a lover of soup, and I wonder if there are some good ideas for soups made with corn.
Oh, yes.
I make mine with milk and sautéed onions.
Yes.
A can of cream corn and a can of kernel corn.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I guess that's about, oh, and then a little thickener with flour and butter or olive oil.
Yes.
So I'd like to know what else.
Okay, I'll tell you the one that I like to make, and it's always no fail. And it's sort of a folk recipe, so amounts are take so you have. You know, you put things in, and if it's not enough, you put more in, and if it's too much, you add something else. I like to take bacon and chop it in little one-inch squares and fry the bacon off, and you can just leave it in the pot. And then a lot of chopped onions that are not too fine diced, but not big chunks of onions, but diced onions and potatoes, and the potatoes in about half-inch cubes, and put those in the I would put the onions in first and sauté them just a bit, and then throw the potatoes in and water, bring up maybe an inch above the potatoes, and cook that until, maybe about 15, 25 minutes so that the potatoes begin to get done, but don't let them get too done, because I like to have a chunky potato that you can, not one that dissolves. And then I use, generally this is in the winter, and then I use frozen corn kernels, and I don't know, probably 2 pounds. I make a big pot of this, and then a half a gallon of, just before you put the corn in, put in some butter so that there's a nice floating of butter on the top, not too much, and then the corn, and then a half a gallon of milk, and heat that up, and then salt and pepper, and it doesn't get any better. It's a corn chowder. It just doesn't get any better than that. And all the stuff is, it's all fresh, and the corn is fresh frozen, so it has a real nice fresh taste. I suppose there could be other things you could add to it to dress it up or whatever, but I like that pretty plain, just salt and pepper and bacon and milk and potatoes and onions. Really easy.
Yes, I did see another recipe that included cheddar.
Oh, so cheddar cheese.
Yes.
That would be an interesting taste. I think that I like this fresh taste better than
yes.
sort of that around the fire. You kind of want to cook it a longer time with cheddar cheese in it, and then that has a distinct taste.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good. Well, that's the way I make it.
All right. Well, thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And again, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. It's our monthly show on cooking with the guy that we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And we have about 15 minutes left in the program. I do want to mention that we do have many recipes from some of our past conversations now available on our website. We have a volunteer that's been working very hard going back to some of those past programs. Something that we have been wanting to do for a long time, because often people say, well, gee, couldn't you put some of those recipes on the website? And now we do have a number of them.
She's out there doing it right now.
And doing it right now, as a matter of fact.
Because I talked to her on the way in.
And so if you have internet access and you go to our website, which is WILL.UIUC.EDU, that will bring up the homepage. Then you want to click on AM, then click on Focus 580, and then click on Links, and then you will see them there when you go to the links. And we have including there some home maintenance info that was provided to us by Hank Spies. We have Dave Sinnoh's Couch Potato Investment Portfolio, and we have the recipes from the shows with Doyle Moore. So that is there. Now, if somebody just didn't have the internet and wanted a recipe, if you sent us a self-addressed stamped envelope, we'll try and get you a recipe. But for folks who are wired, that's the easiest thing to do, is to go to the website and see what we have there. And we also have some other folks here to talk with us. Let's go to Downs for the next call. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a corn off the cob recipe.
Good.
And I just call this corn and zucchini mess.
Oh, good.
Corn and zucchini mess?
I'll bet it's what. Yeah, I bet it's the other recipe I was going to give. I call it calabacitas.
Oh, good.
Because it's squash and corn.
A better name for it. This is 3 ears of corn.
Yeah.
Cut off the cob.
Right.
And then after you do that, I read the most wonderful thing for cutting corn off the cob. Somebody said put a clean kitchen towel under it.
That way it doesn't slide around.
Right,
yes.
And you capture everything on there.
And exactly. It's going all over the place. I put it in a larger stainless steel, like a big vegetable thing, so it's got big size.
Yeah, I do it on a half sheet pan.
Yes. Know?
But then I line it now, and it helps a lot.
Oh, yes, indeed.
But cut rather shallow, and then take the back of the knife.
Oh, yeah.
And run it down the ear of corn.
As you're scraping the rest of the milk out, yes.
Milk out, and you save those separately.
Uh-huh.
You need 2 largish zucchini.
Yes.
Usually I use a green and a yellow.
Yes.
Cut in about quarter-inch cubes.
Small cubes, yes.
And a small red onion.
Right.
Chopped. A little bit of, I use dry vermouth, but it's for deglazing. You can use all kinds of stuff. We can talk about that. A couple of cloves of garlic.
Garlic, yes.
And a bunch of green onion.
Yes.
Cut in quarter-inch slices.
Yes.
I put the corn, not the milk, just the corn, in a dry, heavy skillet. I use cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
And toast it until it's kind of tender. Season it with salt and pepper. Scrape it out, and you'll have lots of brown crusties on the pan.
Yes.
And I put a little vermouth in. You can use white wine. You can use broth. You can use water.
Even water, yes.
But just scrape up those goodies and dump it out into the milk.
Oh, yes.
Save the corn, the milk from the corn. Clean out the skillet a little bit. Add some olive oil. Sauté the onions and the zucchini. Season them a little bit until the zucchini is the way you like it, but a little underdone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So crunchy.
Add the garlic, add the green onion, sauté for a minute or two. Return the corn and the milk mixture to the skillet and cook it until the skillet is fairly dry.
Oh, yes. Okay. So
it's for seasonings, and I thought, when I made this up, I had corn and zucchini I needed to use.
Yes.
I thought, okay, I'm going to do this, and then I'll taste it and see how I want to season it. I just stood there and ate it.
Well, it is very good. Now, you. I was going to say, yeah, the milk is from the corn. I make a version of that not using zucchini and using cream or no-fat half and half, and it's just corn that you kind of cook down with a little bit of cream and salt and pepper. I like that. But now what you're describing is exactly what I was going to talk about, the calabacitas, but let me tell you what it is flavored with. One finely minced, one only, serrano pepper.
Okay.
A little serrano pepper and cumin seeds.
That would be good.
This is a Wyoming sort of slash Mexican particular form that I use, and the calabacitas are really zucchinis that are round, and you can I know you can get them in Wyoming. I know you can get them in Colorado. I've never seen them other places. I suppose New Mexico and Arizona would have them at the right time of the year. And I believe sometimes I've even found them here at the farmer's market.
Yeah, I see them at farmer's market.
Yeah, so that is the direction that comes from. That's a perfect recipe that you've got. That's really good.
It's so, and we eat it as salad. We eat
it. Yes, it's good cold.
We eat it. with some cheese in quesadillas. We eat it hot. We eat it cold. We eat it, you know.
All right. I'll see you one and raise you one more. Stuff a tomato or a pepper half.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Or a zucchini half.
Or a zucchini half. A zucchini boat, yes. Yes, that would do it. That's really good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that's, you see, that's not old. That is a new recipe in a new way, and I think it's just great. This is what I was wondering about today, is it no longer is just boiled corn.
Mm-hmm.
This is good. Mm-hmm. And what was it you called it?
I think she said she just called it zucchini mess.
Oh, zucchini mess, yes.
Yeah. Which is... Which may be descriptive, but, you know, I don't know if that really it.
If you're in a mess hall, it wouldn't be
well, I suppose
demeaning.
I suppose that's right. That's right. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Just also, by the way, I want to mention, maybe I'll mention one more time, this website that I have used a lot that's called Epicurious.
Oh, yes.
That people also might want to look at. And it lists a lot of information about food and cooking, and including recipes. And these are recipes. I think now all of the recipes on here are recipes that have been published in the two of the big cooking magazines, either Bon Appetit or Gourmet. But what you can do with this, there's a recipe search function, and you can put in something like, oh, corn, for example, and then it will give you some recipes to look at. And I just did that for grins, and it gave me 1,305. So that could keep you going for a while.
That would
just
do it.
Just looking at recipes, and they're here just in the first page. That looks like there are several soups. There's a recipe for tamales, for a corn and tomato salad, for corn tortillas, for corn and bacon chowder, for corn
wow.
and okra stew, cornbread, green chili and pine nut stuffing, and cornbread succotash stuffing. And that's just the first of 1,305 entries. So that's something you might want, you know, if someday you're just looking for some inspiration and you'd want some new recipes and you have internet access, you take a look at that website and it would give you,
it works,
it would give
every
you a
time.
Lot of recipes. And we now have several people to talk with. We'll go here again to, let me see, line number two, and I believe that's Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I was just remembering that my husband, when sweet corn wasn't so sweet.
Right.
And didn't hold up well.
Right.
He really had to cook it. His family would have a lot of corn, and if we had extra corn, what they would do is scrape it off the cob, put it in the refrigerator, and the next morning have it with milk for breakfast.
Oh, my.
And I don't know whether they heated up the milk. I can't quite remember that. Seems to me it would make sense. Somehow, to me, it would make sense to heat it up, but I'm not sure that it was heated up. Or that they did anything else to it, whether they put sugar on it or not. But anyway, it would never have occurred to me to have corn and milk for breakfast as kind of like a cereal. But it was cooked corn, of course. And the other thing I was going to say is that a number of years ago, my husband was doing a summer workshop in northern Greece, and I noticed that they had corn for sale on street corners. So I got
yes.
the Greek dictionary out and my little bit of Greek, and I went shopping for corn, and I bought a bunch of corn. The amount of corn I would have bought if I'd been buying sweet corn, I didn't realize I wasn't getting sweet corn. I got a lot of corn, thinking we'd have a nice meal for all these Illinois students who were doing this workshop. And it turned out to be field corn.
Yes.
And was extremely filling. We could barely get through 1 year of corn, let alone 2 or 3 years of corn. So we had corn. We had more corn than we knew what to do with. So I would just mention that. Oh, my father-in-law, who grew up on a farm in north central Ohio, would sometimes come up with, I don't know where he got it from, parched corn, which I think must have been field corn that was cooked and then dried. So it was swelled, and it was kind of like hollow in the center, but it was crispy. It was like a crispy fast food snack, except farm version.
Parched. The Indians did, the ones in the East Coast
did that a lot. They had a funny way of cooking corn, and it was parched.
The kernels are huge.
Well, now there is a variety of corn in Peru that's large, very big. Used to get the I think they called them corn nuts. You could buy them a little package. They're great, big, and they were parched. I believe to do that you have to boil it a little bit. I think it wants to be a little drier, and then it wants to be boiled, and then it wants to be roasted.
Yeah,
and then it gets crunchy, and you can eat it.
Right. Yeah, the way you would corn chips or something.
Corn chips. Yes, I haven't seen those corn nuts for a long time. I don't know.
I haven't either.
But they were from Peru.
Oh, well, these are from North Central Ohio.
Oh, I love
another
it.
Thing about the history of corn is I read somewhere that once corn was discovered and became part of the vocabulary, it was one of the things that allowed the slave trade. Because it was something that could be preserved and carried on the slave ship and kept slaves sort of alive, which is a rather sad thing to think about, but interesting.
Well, it is, but then that also implies that see, corn is a New World food, and it had to be perfected over a long period of time, and then it had to be shipped. Away, so I would guess that would be something from about the 16th or 17th century that would have been a part of that activity.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thank you. Let's see. We'll go next to line number one in Champaign. Hello.
Yep. Is that me?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Being kind of silly, the parts of corn that I like to eat are the tassel and the silks.
Oh, really?
And I don't know how to use smut, but one of the things that hasn't been mentioned is the hominy, which is literally the grain of corn soaked.
Right.
Dehulled.
In lye.
Lye. And then cooked or otherwise. That's the point, I think, where you would either roast, bake, or broil, or whatever it. But the tassels, when they first come out, are delicious. The silk is great in soup, and I'd like to know about how do you smut. I'm listening.
That has that long, involved name.
Wheat lokoje.
Yes, thank you. I don't know anything about it except my uncle was always aggravated because the field was full of it in Oklahoma. And of course, we just thought it was ruined. And then all of a sudden we find out that it's something that is quite wonderful. Now, you have some information on it.
I don't know. All I know is it's obvious it's a fungus that grows on the corn, and that would here in the United States we'd say, well, that would mean the corn was ruined.
Yes.
But in Mexico, it's a delicacy.
Yes.
I have not eaten it. I'm sure that if you went to looking for real Mexican cookbooks of real Mexican cooking, that I would think that you could find some recipes for that. Rick Bayless, who is a cook who lives in Chicago and has a couple of well thought of restaurants and has written several cookbooks, that I think would be a good place to start. I don't know if I suppose I could try on Epicurious. I'm not exactly sure how to spell it if I could find anything for that. I'll tell you what. Let's go to the next person in line here, which is somebody I believe in Terre Haute. Let's go there. Line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody's mentioned this or not, but the microwave is a great way to cook corn.
It is indeed, yes.
Just leave the shucks on and you don't need to soak it or anything. There's plenty of water.
Yeah. How long do you put it in the microwave?
Probably 2 minutes on high, but the microwaves are all different. So
yeah, they are. I was thinking four minutes.
Play around with them, but it's real energy efficient. You don't heat up your kitchen.
You're right, and it still maintains that freshness.
Oh yeah.
2 minutes. I'll try that. I would have probably said four, but
It depends on how big the ears are.
Yeah.
How many and all that stuff. But hey, another great show.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay, here I am on a website called gourmetsleuth.com, which is billed as the gourmet food and cooking resource. And what it says here is that huitlacoche is a fungus that grows naturally on ears of corn. It's harvested and treated as a delicacy. The earthy and somewhat smoky fungus is used to flare quesadillas, tamales, soups, and other specialty dishes. And there is right here, there is a recipe for corn fungus tamales. So again, I guess I would suggest that for somebody, if you do have if you can get to the internet, you have internet access, just type the word huitlacoche into your browser, huitlacoche, and I would bet that you would come up with information and you would come up with recipes. Now, and they say here, actually, they also sell it. So that would be the problem, where if you actually wanted to have some, where would you get
it? Yes.
You might have to go online, or would live someplace where there were a lot of Latino folks and there were groceries that had those kinds of ingredients, maybe you actually could find some. But that's all we can tell you right at this moment. And I think actually we're going to have to stop.
It sounds like it's used as an additive and just an accent rather than a major player.
As this recipe, for example, it uses 2 cans of huitlacoche or 2 cups of fresh. And how many? It doesn't say how many this is supposed to serve. Well, I don't know. But that's something you can check out. And in any case, we have to stop. Go to our website, and we will give you the recipes that we have, will.uiuc.edu. This is something we do on the first Wednesday of every month at 10 o'clock with the man we'd like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. We're going to see you next month?
Either that or I'll be in Texas.
All right. Well, one way or another.